literally watching Bitcoin be blessed by the powers that be within the banking system to shore up the treasury market, to shore up the friggin' dollar, and get us out of this. Bitcoin is playing the role. Like, what's your end argument here? I don't know what else to tell you. What, you think the euro's going to go back to 122 and the dollar's going to go to 70? Powell gets to say, I'm being data-driven, the labor market hasn't rolled over yet. He gets to talk in his speech. Trump gets to complain that what he really wants is lower interest rates. But reality is, holding up this bill into August, into the August recess, is the death of America. So, hey, Bitcoin maxis have all moved to f-ing Panama because you want to be right about everything. Bungle. To say, I mean, it's literally like, I'm fine. Thank you, John Galt, from, you know, reporting from Galt's Gulch. Like, you're still an asshole. The Fed is trying to hold the line because they really can't cut unless there's a sincere problem domestically. So what I would say is, yes.
Bing bong. I am back with another edition of the State of Bitcoin podcast, where I've got the man, the myth, the legend, recurring guest, Tom Luongo, in the house. But Tom, we've had so much crazy stuff happen since the last time you've come on. We've had an assassination attempt on Trump. We've had the Fed and Trump at odds. But today, something unique happened, and I want to dive into that. The ECB and all the global central banks are starting to cut interest rates. Now, with that, do you think that we're at the final tipping point that we've been talking about for so long, where this is now a monetary war, where everyone else is trying to cut and force the Fed's hand, but the Fed is holding strong and trying to keep the dollar as the remaining global reserve currency?
Kind of yes and no. The better way to look at it is that the reserve currency status is something that the United States doesn't want anymore. So a better question to ask is this the beginning of the turn from when the United States goes from being the provider, the reserve currency, which is just part of the whole U.S. Treasury market being held as foreign reserves, versus the dollar just being a dominant trade settlement currency. And then what do we actually mean by a dollar? Like, I just published a podcast with Vince Lanchi where we talked about the role that stablecoins and or Bitcoin can play into this. So what I would say is, yes, the Fed is trying to hold the line because they really can't cut unless there's a sincere problem domestically, because the way to enforce discipline on the global dollar market is to keep rates as high as possible for as long as possible. So the ECB cut rates again today. Trump is, you know, railing that, oh my God, she's cut 10 times or whatever. Like, yeah, that's nice. So she has to. Latest report out this morning on Zero Hedge is that things in Germany are worse than they were pre-2008. Oh, by the way, but that hasn't been the headline because we have media that hates the United States. We have media that's written by and for what I like to call Davos or City of London or whatever you want. You guys can call it whatever you want. I don't care. I know there's guys out there who just call it the Jews, and that's nice, but that's not true because it's bigger than that. So my point is that the goal, it's like, does Lagarde need lower cost of capital in Germany? Of course. Is she trying to force interest rates lower in the on the European continent? Why is she having to cut interest rates? Well, because she's clearly got a deflation problem that's being forced upon her by the Federal Reserve, who's been paring back on offshore dollar liquidity. And that's actually what's destroying the European economy. That's just the way it is. And what she's trying to do is fix the holes in the balance sheets of the member central banks and the commercial banks in Europe that were created when Powell raised interest rates and forced the ECB to raise interest rates. And she's trying to cut, and they're all sitting on massive holes in their balance sheets. And everybody talks about the problems in the American banking system and how the Fed's, got a structural loss and this one's got, that's nice, but how about you go look somewhere else? And then ask yourself, like, no one's beaten a path to Europe's door at this point to like access their consumer markets, right? No one's arguing with Trump over, oh my God, you can't put a tariff on us. Like, no one wants to do business with Europe, because doing business with Europe sucks. And it's only getting worse. And it's only going to get worse. So what Lagarde is doing is she's doing this out of necessity. And the headline is, oh, well, the ECB has, you know, got the room to do this because the euro is so strong. I remind everybody that whether you like him or not, Brent Johnson has not been wrong about this, and neither has Martin Armstrong, and neither have I been, which is that the first stage of a currency crisis always sees the people run into the currency, not away from it. It's after that happens that we have the currency crisis, right? So we've had this run into the euro, into the pound, to a lesser extent, the Swiss franc. What happens next? Well, you think the euro is going to go back to 122 and the dollar is going to go to 70? Really? Did you look at the trade balance numbers from this morning? Really? Like what's your end argument here? Oh, well, right now it's bad. Well, yeah, okay, right now it's bad. Or right now, Trump's winning the tariff war, the trade war, because he's forced the euro up by 12% and put a 20% tariff on them. So now European exports are 32 to 35% more expensive than they were before. And you wonder why Christine Lagarde's cutting rates? You think that's going to keep the euro is going to keep rising under those scenarios? Of course not. So this is the war. The real war is financial. It has been financial for years. It always has been financial. Sometimes it turns kinetic, especially when Europe starts getting into real trouble and they choose to, you know, go to war as opposed to actually fix anything. So that's why we're, you know, that's why we're seeing everything that we're seeing. Like, I literally from the ground up, everything about the Build Back, not the Build Back Better, the Big Beautiful Bill, which is, you know, Trump's way of making fun of Build Back Better. Why the libertarians are all wrong. And I'm dead serious when I say this. Rand Paul is wrong. Thomas Massey is wrong. Elon Musk is playing some kayfabe game because he's ticked off that the, you know, EV subsidies are gone. At least that's the story from this morning. But I mean, could he and Trump be more transparent? I mean, could they be more transparent? Like, everybody talks about, here's another one. You really think that Trump and Powell are at odds? You really think that? Then why has Powell not changed one word after he and Trump met for 2 hours? No one talked about that meeting. They haven't talked about that meeting. Trump didn't say anything after he got done. And yet he goes out there and goes out with some over-the-top, you know, post on Truth Social about too late to Rome. He knows exactly what Powell's going to do. Powell's going to wait until the data turns over before he cuts rates. And while Lagarde may cut by a point or a point and a quarter or a point and a half, Powell will cut by 25. And he's going to cut, whether he cuts at the June meeting or he cuts at the July slash August meeting is, you know, up in the air. But he doesn't need to cut in order for Trump. Him cutting will not change the long end of the yield curve at all. Okay? It won't. It won't. Which is what Trump wants. He wants the long end of the yield curve to come down so he can refinance Janet Yellen's cliff wall. Or, you know, debt cliff, right? At lower rates. But at this point, the market is not going to give him 4.5% if Powell cuts rates by 50 basis points. It's not going to happen. So Trump is going to have to go out 5 years, not 30. And that's going to be the best we can do under these circumstances. Davos is trying to get him to go out one or two by selling our 30s and buying our ones and twos and deforming our yield curve in order to force this issue back onto the table for the 2028 election cycle. They're trying to extend the same operation under Trump that Yellen ran under the Biden junta. Same thing. That's what they're doing. Okay. But when you look at the market, every time we go out into the market and we say, yeah, market likes 5% on the long bond, because we just did a 20-year treasury auction the other day. It was one of the best in history. Did a 5-year auction the other day. It was one of the best in history. Why? Because yields are pretty much properly priced at this point. So everything else is just histrionics from a bunch of people who are about to lose their ass. And I note that for example, the people who are about to lose their ass are the Bank of England. Because they keep having to, you know, do repos, overnight repos with their banks in order to keep their banks solvent. Last week, I think it was $83 billion. Ukraine, by the way, just defaulted on a big tranche of debt. Who do you think they defaulted to on June 2nd? By the way, nowhere in the zeitgeist. No one's talking about this. Everybody's talking about Ukraine and MI6 blowing up a bunch of Russian planes. No one's talking about the fact that the Ukrainians just defaulted on a bunch of British debt, British-backed debt. So that happens on Sunday, and by Tuesday, the Bank of England's having to do $83 billion worth of repos in order to keep their banks from blowing up. And the United States is the one in trouble. Is that air you think you're fucking breathing? Like, I'm literally speaking to everybody on Twitter who tells me I'm full of shit right now. Pass the fucking bill. Get it over and done with. And then we don't need Congress anymore. We don't have to give a crap about Lindsey Graham or whatever the hell he does. Or we don't have to worry about any of this shit. Then we can move forward and we can start cleaning up all the freaking agencies. You want to start to see movement? Pass the bill. Because that's what needs to happen. Trump needs funding for the government through 2026, through the midterms, so he doesn't have to worry about this crap anymore. And the fact that our libertarian brethren can't figure this out, even though they've been told, because they need to grandstand on crappy CBO budget projection numbers that start with the wrong baseline. Like, I'm just so over it, Brandon. I'm like, I'm at the point now, I'm like, is everybody just like, you know, have IQs dropped sharply, to quote Ellen Ripley from Aliens? Like, really? Has everybody just become really fucking stupid? Because that's what's happening. All right, I'll shut up now.
I mean, that was awesome. That was good. There's a lot to unpack there, but you mentioned tariffs, like, you know, a few times. Obviously, Trump has, you know, reversed a little bit of those tariffs, but everybody's either talking about it's the art of the deal, right, where we had zero tariffs around the globe, and then he was able to get 10% tariffs globally and then still keep that, like, 30% tariff on China. Like, how are you viewing China and this relationship with the U.S.? Were the tariffs essentially just a ploy to out China as everybody's enemy who's been exploiting everybody?
It was, or the tariffs would out the European Union as everybody's enemy. The China thing is easy. Like, Trump and Xi just had a phone call. Like, yeah, okay, they're tough negotiators. Okay. You know, Bissent goes out there and he, you know, preps the room for the Trump-Xi phone call. But no one ever expected 145% tariffs on China to stick. The Chinese can't afford this. They still need access to our consumer markets. Okay? All Trump is doing is saying, if you want access to the American consumer, which everybody agrees is the only thing that's been keeping the economy afloat since 2008, you got to pay. We're asking an access charge. As Vince Lanchi put it to me the other day, it's like, it's a market access charge. It's an ATM fee. That ATM fee happens to be a 10% tariff minimum for everybody. Notice, he's gotten the 10% baseline tariff through on everyone, 20% on the European Union. And he wants to put 50 on the European Union. Why do you think he's threatening 50% on the European Union to go into effect a month from now? Because right around a month from now, American aid pledged under Biden to Ukraine ends, pretty much runs out. You have the budget cliff wall. You have all that stuff starting to hit. So he wants all that to hit immediately, and he wants the European Union. It's a counter move to them trying to force him into getting into a war with Russia, which he's not going to do. Like, everything is proceeding, but everything hasn't completed. So what we're dealing with is there a deal between the United States, Iran, and Russia over Iran's nuclear program, which would then take all the wind out of Israel sails. Yes, pretty much it's done. They can't. Again, but same thing with Russia and the United States over Ukraine. Pretty much done. What's holding all of it done? What's holding these things up? The final crossing of the T's and dotting of all the I's. Signing on the dotted line. The budget reconciliation bill. Because if he makes any definitive moves on those fronts, then the fake Republicans in Congress will defect on him. So you've got to get them across the line. This is why I'm so angry with the wedge libertarians. They should be the ones getting this across the line because the bill actually does cut spending. Does it cut a lot of spending? Does it cut enough spending? No. Is it what we're going to get given the friggin' is it close to the best we can get given the situation with three seats in the House and, you know, and negative two de facto, not de jure, but de facto seats in the Senate when we got at least five traitors in the Senate? Yeah, it's what you got. So get over yourself. There's other things you can do under rescission. Finish the reconciliation bill. Get it out the door. Get this thing done and move on. Take the win. The win may be a single or a double and not a grand slam. Okay. Did you sell as a grand slam? Of course you did. Did I even sell a grand slam? Yeah, they've identified all the cuts. They can't get them through this Congress. The cuts have been identified. They know how to cut $1.3 to $1.7 trillion from the budget, but they can't. And everybody who's complaining about this and standing on their and lighting their hair on fire and standing on their principles, they're not really. You know what they're doing? They're standing on their principles to make sure they don't get fucking primaried in February. When at this point, when you have a guy like, so that's Rand Paul and Thomas Massey. When you have a guy like Lindsey Graham going out there literally negotiating with foreign governments, violating the Logan Act, building support within the Senate to try and push Trump into the war in Ukraine, this is Lindsey Graham acting on his Davosian holders of the tapes, him fucking little boys, and saying, you're going to lose in the primary. We have to burn you now. If you guys can't see that, I don't know what else to tell you. But that's what's going on. Lindsey Graham is a rapidly depreciating asset. Right now, Rasmussen has him losing by 14 to 16 points to a ham sandwich. I could run against Lindsey Graham right now and win. Right? You could run against Lindsey Graham and win in South Carolina. They're done with him. So if you're his handlers and his owners, you burn him. Just like they burned Mitt Romney, just like they burned out every other asset they've ever had. And they're burning out right now, even though they're either too stupid to realize it or not, Thomas Massey and Rand Paul and everyone else. They burned out Mitch McConnell. He's done. Right? And they'll continue burning these people out because that's the good news. They're burning all of their assets. Why? They don't have any leverage. They're just playing the leverage that they have. When the American people want this done and they want Congress to stop screwing around and all they're doing is tightening the noose for the primaries. So you've got guys who would normally be on the pork fence screaming, oh, we're going to hold this bill up because, you know, we don't want to be primaried and next year. We're holding the line against spending. Really? Until when? Until you get reelected? Until you're past your primary? That's the nature of politics. And Elon Musk going out there and going off of his fucking meds and then, you know, shit posting on Twitter doesn't mean anything. It's true, by the way. You know, Elon's not the most stable guy in the world. Like Trump. And so we have what we have. So,
Well, all right. So it sounds like the ECB is the real enemy and everybody's just framing it as China is the real enemy. Is that kind of the situation, the monetary situation that we're seeing playing out is that Trump is, I guess, publicly pointing the finger at China. In reality, he's doing all these moves to just, you know, take power away from the ECB?
Yeah, no, it's a mixture of things. Like he's negotiating hard with China. He knows China's a problem. China is not blameless here. They are not the only enemy, though. The bigger enemy is the one that actually runs, that has actually been betraying us for, well, since Cornwallis surrendered at Yorktown. Like, that's what we're dealing with, right? That's the bigger enemy. And what he's done is he's isolated them, and he's also, in effect, empowered China, who remembers the opium wars. Like, okay, how about we do this? How about we agree, because we agreed on this, that we get rid of those guys, and then we have to cut another deal. And they're still negotiating about what the other deal is going to be without Europe in a dominant position as the intermediary. That's the point. Like, and that's where we have to, you can't win this war until you destroy all those old relationships, until you destroy all those old families. They have to be destroyed. They have to put their seed corn on the table. They can't no longer use our money to undermine us. You know, we have different factions in the American government. Some are loyal to the Europeans. Some are loyal to the Chinese. Most of them are in California. Okay? Like, you have different factions up on Capitol Hill. You have different people talking out of different sides of their mouth. Very few of them are working for the American people. Okay? And so there's no way to simplify this because it's not a simple map. And so it comes to a point where you have to let go at some point of your own anxiety over this, over, you know, what it is you think you know and you think you don't know, and go, we know they hate him. That means that everything he's doing that he wants, they're going to oppose root and branch. And then you have to call into question the loyalty of those who were opposing him at this moment in time, given the strategic severity of the situation. This is literally like saying on the eve of D-Day, having a general say, you know what? I'm not really down with this plan, Ike. I'm not going to land with the troops at this beach. I'm holding my guys back because I don't like this plan. I want a new plan. Like, it doesn't work that way. We are in a war, and at some point, you have to live with the fact that the general you have is the general you have. The plan you have is the plan you have. And if you understand the strategic importance of all of this, it's the best you're going to get. So, and as investors and as people, we go, hope he succeeds. He might not. So people are buying gold. People are buying silver. People are buying a little bit of Bitcoin. They're making strong hedge plays, but that's not confirmatory of anything. When foreign central banks are still buying our freaking treasuries. No, they're not buying our 30 years at 4.5%. Okay, fine. Pass this bill, and I'll bet you dollars to dog shit that the long end of the treasury yield curve drops by 25 basis over a week. Because it's the uncertainty over this bill that's driving people out of duration in the American bond market. Uncertainty. Who's going to buy it? Who's buying 30 years, right? If they can't lay that risk off. But they'll buy ones and twos. They'll buy twos and threes. And then if you have people stepping on the market and writing all the headlines to maximize the uncertainty, and you have people addicted to a false revenue model for the United States, an old revenue model that doesn't work, we know doesn't work, and is rapidly being changed into something else, you have what you have. So I look at 5% on the 30-year under these circumstances, and I'm like, at least it's a market. Have you looked at the market? Because I have. I do it every day. And I'm like, this is bullshit. This is like looking at the Japanese bond market 2 years ago. This is bullshit. We all know it. The Bundesbank and ECB are sitting on the friggin' yields. Like, we don't have free markets, folks. I wish we did. We don't. So now analyze what you got, not what you want. We'll get to what we want at some point, but it's going to be a process, and that process is not going to happen in 6 months. And if you think it's going to happen in 6 months, you need it to happen in 6 months, please do me a favor. Either quit fucking Congress, resign from the Senate, or shut the fuck up. Depending on who you are. So if you're Thomas Massie, quit the Congress. If you're Rand Paul, resign from the Senate. And if you're, you know, some jackass on FinTwit who thinks you know something, shut the fuck up. That's where I am.
That's electric. Sorry. The best place to buy Bitcoin in the United States and Canada is the Bitcoin Well. You could go to the bitcoinwell.com/greencandle and sign up today, and they will give you wishing well tokens. They are one of the only exchanges in the United States that will give you free sats every time you buy Bitcoin. You have a chance to win 1 million sats every time you buy. You get wishing well tokens. You flip the coin down the wishing well, and you have the chance to win 1 million sats. You heard me here, folks. 1 million sats. And on top of that, they have the absolute best over-the-counter service where you can make purchases over $50,000. And they will walk you through the whole thing. They have the best rates in the United States and in Canada. And on top of that, they have the best white glove service where they will take you through those giant purchases just so you feel comfortable. You'll get it in cold storage, and it's strictly non-custodial. They are saying, we want you to experience the true power of Bitcoin, and that's self-custody. So go to the well, sign up, bitcoinwell.com/greencandle today. No, I love your rants, Tom. This is why I bring you on to hear all of them. But, you know, when you're talking about the tariffs and kind of this battle back and forth, right? It always comes to the question where, or I always come back to the question, we've seen central banks essentially loading up on gold for quite some time. And it seems like, you know, Japan's connection with the United States plays a big role as well. I mean, we had the Japanese carry trade essentially explode last year in August. And then, you know, we're having Japan essentially saying that they have a worse economy than Greece right now. So, and we all know how Greece is, you know, Greece is in the
ECB. That's not what he said.
Yeah.
That's not what he said, but that's okay. That's how it was reported. That's not what he said.
Okay, then let's dive into that. What did he actually say? And then how do you Japan's relationship?
What Ishiba is dealing with in Japan is a budget and cost problem that he's trying to change he's under pressure at a budgetary level. And he's literally saying what he argued was that, look, we cannot raise taxes and cut spending at this moment in time. That would give us a far worse situation than Greece ever did. We can't do what he was doing. Was making the argument against typical IMF style austerity, which is what they imposed on Greece. If you want that to happen, that's not what he said. Okay. He said, if you want a situation that's worse than Greece, then let's do this. But that's not what he wants to do. He basically said, it's like, we have to hold spending. We've got to cut taxes slightly, and we need to deregulate the economy. That's how we're going to get out of this slowly. And we're going to alter monetary policy. That's on his fiscal side. He's already got a Bank of Japan that, like Powell, is at the Fed, committed to normalizing interest rates. So now let's talk about the headlines. We have a 40-year Japanese JGB trading at the highest yields in 40 years. Oh my God, that writes a headline. But the Japanese have been dealing with inflation that's far higher than they have in the past. And therefore, they have to allow the long end of the yield curve to sell off so that they can entice investors to buy at a real positive spread over the CPI. Inflation is trying to come down in Japan. Energy prices are low. Trump's tariffs on China have forced a lot of American LNG into Japan at lower prices. Oh, by the way, because it's no longer, you know, our energy exports into China are no longer profitable at those same prices where they were before, where the Chinese would pay for them. A lot of that, you know, LNG and, you know, and oil is going in, is moving into Japan, only got a 10% tariff as opposed to the Chinese. So you got to realize that these things are far more complicated than that. Japan is a very interesting problem, but they are absolutely our ally, not our adversary. They are also potentially one of the attack vectors on us. So after they attacked the tariff tantrum from early April, what a shock. About 3 or 4 weeks later, all of a sudden they're ramping up the, you know, Japan fear porn. Why? Because if you can't attack the SOFR, they attempted to attack the SOFR market in April and they failed. Okay. And they put a lot of money on the table and they made a real big push for it. I'm talking now specifically London, City of London, Europe. They've made their push to destabilize the SOFR basis trade, attack SOFR through that trade. That failed. Yes, it cost us some money. Yes, it cost us time. Yes, it cost us a lot of. It was a cost. It was an operation. It was a nearly successful operation because the Fed quietly had to throw some, $46 billion worth of temporary liquidity into the banking system. Okay. 3 weeks later, they attacked Japan. You attack Japan the same way you attack the United States because of the yen carry trade. Okay? Because of, you know, and you always have people out there screaming, oh, Japan is coming, it's Japan. Kyle Bass, whomever. I know Kyle Bass works for the friggin' bad guys. I don't, you know, and then there's Peter Zeihan and all the rest of those assholes. There are a couple others who keep outing themselves, and I'm like, I used to think you were just an idiot. Now I think you're an operative. I'm not going to name names. Japan is a different issue. It's the same issue. It's a different vector. That's all it is. This is a war. Wars are fought on many fronts. But the problem, of course, like everything else, is if you look at this from Europe's perspective, if you don't destroy the U.S., if you don't destroy Japan, if you don't antagonize the U.S. and China, if you don't try to get the U.S. and Russia into a war, they're going to lose. They have no collateral. They have no future without destabilizing the rest of the world and continuing to run their colonial scheme, their colonization schemes through currency arbitrage, which is what they've been doing for 400 years. Now we're taking that business from them. They're big mad about it. We should expect some pushback. We're getting it. Pass the fucking bill. And all of this goes away.
So is that basically
the
solution?
It's not serious. Like it's not that hard.
That's the solution. Just a big, beautiful bill. Trump has been doing it. That will solve all the issues?
It'll solve a lot of them in the short term. It creates certainty that then allows, like I said, think about it. We get budget certainty. We get the U.S. beginning to commit to a path of reorganization, changing the tax structure, securing the border, cutting some mandatory spending, putting rescission bills on, and then putting it, then working towards rescission to cut even more spending, and allow the agencies to just keep quietly canceling contracts and watching the money go out the door, stop the money from going out the door while the tariffs raise the revenue. $25, $30 billion a month. Like when this Treasury comes out for next quarter and says, you know what, we're going to need $60 billion less funding than we originally projected. Everybody's going to ignore it. Oh, it's only $60 billion. We have a $2 trillion deficit. Guys, you're not turning a battleship around on a dime. Like it's not a sports car. And all of the inertia that you're railing about is under your control. Your congressman is a traitor. Your senator is a traitor. So why don't you fucking do something about it as opposed to whining about it on Twitter and talking about your individualist fucking bona fides? Like, I'm sorry that your fifis are in a bunch and your panties are in a fucking bunch, but we have work to do. Do you want to save the country or not? No, most of these people hate the country. That's the truth. And this is another layer of the psyop that we're uncovering here. How many people we look at as trusted members of our society actually hate our society because they feel so betrayed by it. I used to be one of these people. Burn it all down. Let God sort it out. No, you burn certain people down and you try and fix what you can. And I'm not going that gently into that good night. I can see a path out of this. I've seen it for 4 years, and it's not that it's the only path. There are multiple paths out of this. But once you see one, and then you watch the people, and then you watch the usual suspects go out there and act as if it's not possible. And I'm like, that's nice, but you know, that's you projecting your anxiety onto somebody else. That's you projecting your ignorance or your lack of understanding onto another process. I'm at the point now where I'm like, look, we cannot have people who go out there and mouth the platitudes, but aren't willing to do the hard work. It's that simple. I've been done with Bitcoin maxis forever and a day for these exact reasons. Bitcoin maxis say, don't worry, stack sats, the world will be better. Really, Nostradamus? Okay. Like, I remember when I used to say, just stack fucking gold and check out and whatever. What are you building? What are you doing? How are you going to deal with the trillions of, how are you going to deal with the billions of people who don't buy into that? What are you going to do with them? How are you going to get them across the line? How are you going to get, you know, these aging boomers who are all dying of type 2 diabetes and complications thereof? How are you going to get them to, oh, we're just tell them to buy Bitcoin, everything will be fine? Really? Or are you going to actually engage in the real world and the real world problems that everybody has today? And how are you going to deal with that? So what I've tried to do is look at the world and be generous and look at the people that we elected and we put in place that we know these people that our enemies, we know these, our enemies hate these people. We know that. We know they hate Trump. And then of course they hated every one of his cabinet picks and they fought his fucking cabinet picks root and branch. Right. So shouldn't you just go with the heuristic that as always, you know where you stand with someone in politics by who their enemies are? Can't you just live with that and just stop with the knee-jerk oppositional defiance disorder and the need to be a critic and not actually be a builder? Because that's where we are. We've got too many critics and not enough builders. People are not willing to actually do the hard work of building a new house or altering or doing the refit on the existing house. They just want to criticize you while you do it. Oh, you're doing that wrong. Well, that's nice. Genius, get the fuck over here, pick up a hammer. The more I talk about this, the more outraged I get about it, the more I think back to my appearance at the Mises Institute and getting completely fucking shut down when all I was trying to do was say, it's time to start building. It's time. Here we are. We did the work. We got 40, 50 years worth of building of all of this stuff, that this knowledge base you've got, these arguments and everything else. There are people trying to fix things. Maybe we should help them. Nah. We like our grift. That's where I'm putting it. No, we're comfortable with our grift. Okay. Then we can safely ignore you now. Unfortunately, we're watching like the idea that Thomas Massie, like this mouth breathing fucking idiot from Kentucky, seriously, is like the font of all wisdom now of all things academic, because what? He's been so successful in the Senate or in the House getting anybody to do anything other than sit around and piss, whine, bitch, and moan. I mean, even friggin' Ron Paul was like, you guys can't cut nearly as deeply as you think you can. I mean, that's what Elon Musk said when he encountered Ron Paul. He's like, oh no, you've got to go slower than this. You've got problem that you got to work out. And yet here we are, like, it's nonsense. I'm not saying that this bill is good in any objective sense. Is there shit in it that I don't like? Absolutely. But at some point, this is what you're going to get, folks. And standing on principle is going to ensure that you lose the world you currently lose, what you have left. And this stops the bleeding. Like, it's triage. It's not, you know, it's stopping the bleeding so that you can start to do the real surgery. And if you're not willing to look at it that way, well, whatever. Like, why have me on the podcast other than to have me say this rant yet again? Because if you're not going to fucking listen, what's the point? Because you just want to be right when it all collapses? I'm like, well, yeah, I told you it was going to collapse. We didn't do anything. We sat around arguing about fucking semicolons like I did 20 years ago in the goddamn Libertarian Party. Same freaking people, by the way. Same people. They just call themselves Bitcoiners now. Oh, God, it pisses me off. Like, well, we're trying to literally save the world from these fucking evil people who fuck children and traffic children. These people are 500-year-old vampires feeding off your labor and your life. Like, at some point, we get some of them and we move forward. I wash my hands of the entire fucking movement, because real individualists understand you don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. You don't do this. You fix what you can and then you build off of your wins. This is not two outs, bottom of the ninth, bases loaded, Reggie Jackson comes up against Charlie Huff, hits a fucking grand slam, you win the friggin' World Series. This is, we're down by five, it's the middle of the eighth, I got five outs left, I got to manufacture five runs. It's the National League, and the pitcher's up third this inning. What do I have to do? That's the scenario. How do I get past him and manufacture a run and get out of the inning? And then do I bring in my third reliever? Do I do this? So, you know, that game. That's the game you're playing. Like, it's childish thinking. You know, too much Hollywood, not enough reality.
Yeah, so it's more situational, right? We got to figure out if we're bringing in the righty or the lefty. It depends who's up the plate, right? So, you know, that's
what makes baseball actually worth watching as a game. Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
As opposed to the designated hitter in the short porch.
Yeah,
let's just hit home runs all day, and everybody will show up.
Exactly. It's more of the situational and the strategic approach. But I mean, you brought it up, man. I gotta ask. So, does Bitcoin play any sort of role here?
Absolutely. I mean, Bitcoin is playing the role. We're literally watching Bitcoin be blessed by the powers that be to be another collateral asset, hard collateral asset, within the banking system to shore up the treasury market, to shore up the friggin' dollar and get us out of this. That's what the stablecoin bill is about. It's about the process of, but I hate to break it to everybody. It's like, I look at Bitcoiners and I'm like, did you really think you were going to take over the world without becoming part of the very system you hate? Do you still think that we're like in 2013 with all of us like firing up the mining software or join a mining pool and, you know, burn out my video card to make 20 cents and like move shit around, you know, privately. You think that's the way Bitcoin? No, it's not where we are. But it's too many of them still have that this idea. And then we have the kind of, the idea that it's I want to comment on this, but I know I shouldn't because I haven't actually watched the speech. But Saif Amous's speech at the Bitcoin conference, where the title was, the can't save the stable coins, can't save the mathematically, they can't save the U.S. Treasury market. I didn't watch the speech, but I'm like, no one's saying it can. Like, that's $500 billion isn't enough. Like, what are we going to, like, do you not realize that what it actually is about? What that $500 billion worth of liquidity buys? I don't know. I mean, I hope his argument was far more nuanced than the headline, because if it wasn't, well, then forget it. I don't know. Because the point of Tether and other stable coins and any, be it, RLUSD or whatever, pick your stable coin, I don't give a fuck. Whether it's, stable coins that are issued by your broker, Fidelity token or whatever. Like, what matters is that the Treasury market is going to, in order to get access, and Vince Lanchi did a wonderful job on my podcast of explaining this, in order to get access in the future to our consumer markets and to our investing markets, you're going to be able to pledge your treasuries, get stable coins, and be able to get them at par.
Okay, so you've discovered Bitcoin and are on the path to financial self-sovereignty. But simply holding Bitcoin is not enough. You need to make sure that it's stored properly and you are in 100% control over all your assets. So sharing your keys with third parties and taking on that counterparty risk is not the answer. The answer is pure and simple. It's uncompromising self-custody, and there's no better way to do it than the Bitcoin way. They've got over 25 years of cybersecurity experience, and their team of experts can help you properly self-custody your Bitcoin, secure your digital life, configure your privacy phones, and even establish a Plan B residency if you're looking to do so. So I'm going to help you guys out here and give you a free consultation if you take the first step and visit thebitcoinway.com/greencandle, and you can check out the boys at the Bitcoin Way and see how they can help you become self-sovereign.
And then utilize those domestically, as opposed to those who don't want to play ball, don't want to cut deals with the United States, don't want to invest in the United States. You're going to have to pay for dollars, which you still need, at something above par. You're going to get 95 cents in return on the dollars that you pledge. And it's going to be the Fed's role in the future, and you can see it already forming. It's going to be the Fed's role to be the monitor of that and be the arbiter of that. How much is the ATM fee going to be? And at first, it'll probably be very small, 25 basis points, 20 basis points, whatever it is. But then over time, it can grow to whatever the market can bear. And, I envision a future, and I think this is the thing that really burns the tits of a lot of Austrians. I can easily envision a future, a stable future, where the Fed is rolled back to its pre-19th Banking Act of 1935. Roots, where it provides lender of last resort services to the domestic economy and is the enforcer of the dollar at par on the international market, and stable coins are the mechanism that they're the capital control. They're the mechanism by which in effect you can almost look at it as a one-way permeable membrane. Like, treasuries can come in, a dollar, capital can come in at par, but it can't leave at par. It has to go in some other way. And so that's all part of this plan. You're not going to get that done if you don't get the bill passed. The bill is literally at this point, this is no different, Brandon, than the fall of 2021, when the Biden junta and Pelosi were trying to cram Build Back Better down our throats, along with the infrastructure bill, along with the debt ceiling crisis. And Pelosi kept, for some dumb reason, kept trying to tie all three bills together into one singular vote. Why? Because if she piecemealed it out, she wouldn't get what she wanted, which was then Build Back Better would get destroyed in committee. It would get pulled apart and watered down. And so that was the tell that they were trying to destroy the country and saddle and blackmail the Fed and saddle the United States with trillions upon trillions upon trillions of dollars of debt, which, by the way, the CBO, you know, spent months delaying their report on because they didn't want to say to the world, oh, yeah, by the way, they've all been lying about that the bill is revenue neutral. Then the CBO report eventually comes out and says, oh, yeah, it's going to cost us $6.5 trillion. And most of that cost is going to be in the first 3 years. I'm like, well, how is that going to happen? How are we going to pay for that? Oh, right. We have to go back to the zero bound. That's the strategic plan. So they're doing the same thing here with this bill. They're trying to stop us from being able to fully get control over our domestic economy without needing anything at all from City of London and or old Europe and that banking cartel. They're going to have to come to us and go, yeah, no, you're going to, not only are you going to invest here, but you can't get your money out. We're going to stop the hot money flows. We own you now. You don't own us. And if you don't want to, and if you don't want to play, that's fine. Go to war with Russia. Good luck to you.
Well, I mean,
this is what power politics looks like when it returns. Not, you know, not Lady Macbeth politics.
Yeah, so it's interesting because you're saying that Powell and Trump really aren't at odds, even though it seems like publicly, you know, Trump is saying things like he could fire Powell if he doesn't lower interest rates. Why do that? Why put her on the facade that, you know, he's wanting these lower interest rates if you don't think that Powell and Trump are at odds?
Because he actually wants Powell to not cut rates.
So is he doing that then to...
He actually wants Powell not to cut rates.
Yeah, is he doing that then to...
Because essentially, by doing this, he allows Powell to remain looking like he's independent and that he's not on anybody's side. Powell gets to say, I'm being data-driven, the labor market hasn't rolled over yet, you know, the PCE deflator is still above 2.5, our inflation target. He gets to talk in his speak. Trump gets to complain that what he really wants is lower interest rates. But reality is Trump knows he's going to get lower interest rates eventually. Powell knows that he can't cut rates into this budget uncertainty. So get the budget passed, and then we'll talk about lower interest rates. We're getting very close to that point where Powell's going to cut rates.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the CME group, which I like to use to see if they'll cut interest rates, it said at this point it's like less than a 1% chance that he'll cut in June. So obviously pretty unlikely. They're usually, I would say, like fairly spot on.
The Fed funds futures, the Fed funds futures, what you're referring to is the Fed funds futures projections. And they are, yeah, when we get in within a month of an FOMC meeting, they're usually spot on.
Yeah.
And the SOFR futures curve is saying in many ways the same thing. So yeah, the SOFR futures curve is now, you know, projecting 2, possibly 3 rate cuts before the end of the year. So anywhere from 50 to 75 basis points. December 2025 money is trading at about 3.82-3.85%. So it can go down to 3.75 and we were at 4.5. So that would be 3 rate cuts. If it goes up to 4, then it's only 2 rate cuts.
Yeah. So is this basically just one giant play to get everybody else to cut interest rates and the Fed to keep everything strong? So everywhere else could potentially go into like, you know, be super dependent, I guess, on the U.S. Because it seems like everywhere else is their economies are waning pretty quickly. And, you know, everywhere else it's going to see potentially an economic recession where the U.S. this is essentially the only path for that, you know, whether it's soft landing or, you know, avoiding a recession altogether. Is that kind of the plan here, it seems?
It is, but I, you know, everybody's really worried about this word recession. You know, we have tremendous, tremendous malinvestment in the global economy. Like, we did how many years at the zero bound? We did how much global spending on COVID? Like, we have to deal with the fact that the inflation that happened is here and it's not going away. Like, sometimes I listen to people talk and I'm like, do you not understand that we're never going back to 2019 prices? We're not. Those savings were stolen. They were stolen during the Biden junta. Like, they're gone. Now, the best you can do is try and figure out how to minimize the damage from here. So, what you said is mostly, I think, mostly correct in that the longer that the U.S. stays at the highest rate it can be at, right? From a Fed funds perspective, and the markets, the credit markets aren't showing any real signs of stress. Are they showing signs of deterioration? Sure. Are they showing signs of reorganization? Sure. But everyone else, yeah, they're going to be in trouble because the world is still net short dollars by an awful lot. So then the big question is, you know, again, if we're at a point now where everybody else is starting to cut rates because they're worried about deflation, they're trying to stimulate, and then what are they going to do? Weaken their currencies? Okay. But first, their currencies are going to strengthen versus the dollar because the U.S. is actually weakening the dollar by creating, you know, this uncertainty. It's like everything else. Let's back up for a second. Their goal is to create uncertainty. Are you here? We good?
Yeah. Yeah. I think Brandon? We lost you for a second. I got you now.
Okay. No worries. Okay. I'm sorry, guys. On Starlink, it's a bad day here in Florida. Doing my best. And I do still believe I'm on the right. Yes. And I am still on the right Wi-Fi network in my house. I've got two. If I have a power blip, I wind up on the wrong one and then it's terrible. So I'm on a wireless connection, a wired connection to my Starlink, basically. So what I was trying to say is this: Davos's goal in the short term to create uncertainty is to stop the U.S. from getting fiscal certainty, which freezes capital. The capital doesn't know what to do. Into this mix, Trump is changing the way capital is moving in and out of the United States by putting on tariffs. So everybody still needs access to our markets because producers are not sovereign. Consumers are sovereign. Why? Consumers have money. They have to be willing to part with that money in exchange for, I don't know, this thing, right? To coffee cup or pack of cigars or whatever it is, or the books that are behind me, the board games, right? So consumers can always withhold. Producers, on the other hand, have to project potential demand and produce. And so in the near term, the consumer always has the ability to basically ask for a better price. And that's what Trump is doing. He's asking for a better price. Now, the response to that is to try and make him look like a madman. And so in the short term, what you do is you ramp up the uncertainty surrounding tariffs and you ramp up the uncertainty around the dollar. But the reality is that once the tariffs are in place and everybody knows that Trump has the leverage, what is that doing? Everybody at the margin, not at the central bank, not at the operator level, not at the 40,000 foot level where markets can be moved by central bank policy and by bullion and by you know, broker dealer shenanigans. What's really happening? We're not sure we're going to get access to dollars in the future. We're not sure we're going to have very good business going forward. I have these debts. I need to be able to pay off. I have this payroll to make, blah, 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 blah. So what happens? The demand for the local currencies rises. People starts, they spend less, the demand for the local currency goes up, and they dump and they do less business with the United States. So in the short term, again, the uncertainty, you write the headline, oh, no one loves the dollar. Everybody hates the dollar. Okay, fine. But what's really happening is everybody loves their own currency because everybody's actually short. If the people who are short their own currency are fucked, and they still won't be able to pay, be able to export their stuff because they're responding to themselves being net short. And therefore, like, it's a terrible spiral. They need to be able to sell into the United States market, but they can't. Trump raised the tariff, then their currency rose, and now they're in trouble. So they're going to reverse this trade at some point. The dollar is going to start to rise. The euro has to fall. The pound has to fall. They have to offset this tariff. Why do you think Trump then turns around and told them, no, 50%? So what's Europe going to do? You know, what's BMW going to do? They're going to cut the price of their car. They're going to cut the euro to 70 cents or 60 cents. Okay. How are you going to get that? I mean, like, the understanding, you know, so you're either going to eat the freaking tariff or you're going to negotiate a trade deal where all of the non-tariff stuff that's actually keeping our products out of their markets so that we can't get the benefit as exporters to them because they have high barriers to entry to their markets. Like, everybody does this, and the goal is sort of to break those things down. But in the short term, yeah, we're going to do that. And oh, by the way, we know you're net short dollars. So, and they're going to have to disgorge their stock of treasuries. They're going to run out of money, and their trade surplus is drying up. So they won't be able to recycle their trade surplus in Europe into US treasuries and continue to accumulate. Once that rolls over, they're going to have to dump. And yeah, if they dump, will the long end of the yield curve rise? Yeah. But we're building an entire network of other mechanisms by which to catch all those treasuries, monetize them, tokenize them, and use them to invest. If you strengthen the domestic demand for the dollar and those treasuries start getting disgorged, and you change the way we handle capital internally, we're going to buy all those treasuries as they sell them, and we're going to save them, and we're going to get paid. And this is a way to, you've got to change the dynamic where it's only foreigners who want to buy our debt as opposed to Americans buying debt. That's the trick. That's a lot of what this bill does, what helps codify. Then come the cuts, and then come more of the cuts and all the rest of it. But you've got to get that process started. And there are other ways for Trump to and Bessent to deal with that problem, to deal with building up that demand. But it's all the bits and pieces of it are right there. They're all staring you in the face. Like, and, you know, let's start by cutting taxes. Let's start by, like, you know, there are so many things that they could easily get done. Like, I'll give you a perfect example of one of the things that I know that, you know, our current traitorous Congress is trying desperately to stop. Trump floated the idea of getting rid of taxes, capital gains taxes.
Self-custody can be a daunting task. That's why I've partnered with Bitbox. They have the best hardware wallet. They make it the easiest to put Bitcoin in self-custody. So go to bitbox.swiss/greencandle today and use promo code greencandle, and you can get 5% off your entire order. They make it so easy, all in one. You could get the hardware wallet, you could get their punch plates, you could do it all right there on that website to make the self-custody experience the easiest it can be. So visit bitbox.swiss/greencandle, use promo code greencandle, get 5% off your entire order, and get your Bitcoin off an exchange into self-custody today. All right, enough for me. Let's get back to the show.
Notice how we're not talking about it anymore, but he floats the idea. Imagine this. You run a small business. I run a small business. I don't know about you, but you run a small business. You get an LLC. What's the first thing you do is the reason you do that is so that you can avoid paying self-employment tax, because that's pretty much what you get around. And it's, of course, sold to the country and to the first order analysts who say, well, only rich people pay capital gains tax because only rich people own stocks because the lower portion of the economy, you know, these are the macro guys, right? Well, that's not going to help the little guy at all. Well, it does if you're a small business owner. A small business owner, you know, their business makes X, right? And then they pay themselves a salary. Whatever that salary is all they pay self-employment tax on. Everything above that, that the company profits, gets distributed as dividends to the small business owner. That's counted as capital gains tax. That dividend is taxed as capital gains, which is short-term capital gains, which you then have to pay your normal marginal rate on. But you didn't pay self-employment tax on it. You didn't pay FICA. You didn't pay Social Security. You didn't pay Medicare on it. You choose, by doing that, to take the taxes, to take the income up front and not pay into Social Security and Medicare at the full rate, right? Every small business owner in America who's not doing things as sole proprietorship because they're not idiots, benefits tremendously from that. Every small business owner now all of a sudden has a cap table and an investment table in terms of how to run their business, where they don't have to plan for a ruinous tax bill at the end of the year because their business was good, because they were excellent at their business, and stifling the growth of every small business as the owner's marginal tax rate moves up into the teeth of the regressive tax system, which they never index, and they never properly index for inflation the new tax brackets for. Do away with capital gains tax, and all these people are in the 10 to 12% tax bracket, not the 25 to 28% tax bracket. You know, their business made 150 grand last year, 200 grand. Like, this is the thing no one wants to talk about. That got nixed almost immediately. But if Trump were to do that, yeah, you want to see small businesses grow in America? Do that. But we can't get that done with this Congress. And we're not going to get it done with the next Congress, even if guys like Massey and Paul and others who do really, I'm being generous, they want to fix things. Like, even to be generous to Massey and Paul and the rest of them, and they want to be good at this. They want to fix things. I don't disbelieve that they want to fix things. What I disbelieve is, how are they going to get there? What's their mechanism for getting there? Like, tomorrow, we should get rid of capital gains tax. Are we going to do so with Lindsey Graham as senator from South Carolina, and Lisa Murkowski from Alaska, and Susan Collins from Maine? No. Mitch McConnell? No. That comes next summer. Have a little goddamn faith. Hold these people's feet to the fire. The American people understand this better than the ones who are literally out there demagoguing this shit. Like, fix this, give me something, and we'll go on. Like, I don't know what else to tell you. Like, there's so many ways to skin this cat. And, you know, holding up this bill into the August recess, is the death of America. So, hey, Bitcoin maxis have all moved to fucking Panama because you want to be right about everything. Bungle. Fuck off. So say, I mean, it's literally like, I'm like, fine. Thank you, John Galt, from, you know, reporting from Galt's Gulch. Like, you're still an asshole.
So, well,
that's the way I feel about it. Like, I understand. Like, dude, I used to be John Galt. Now I'm Dagny Taggart. It's that simple. I'm going to go out and I'm going to fight for as long as possible because civilization is more goddamn important than being right. Because if this bill doesn't pass and we don't fix the fucking border, we don't spend the time in the legislative session in the fall fixing the election cycle and fixing the budget for the next 5 years, and forget it. If we're still fighting about this in the fall, forget it. It's all over. Trump will be a lame duck before he's even been in power. Davos will friggin' win. We'll be at war with the Russians by 2027, kinetically. All y'all who are sitting here today, sitting on your sats, going, you're 35 years old, you're sitting on your sats, I got news for you. You're gonna be in a fucking foxhole outside of Dnipropetrovsk in 3 years. And I got news for you. Your river account won't mean shit. That's what you're dealing with. That's the stakes. And if you don't see those stakes and you don't understand those stakes, I'm sorry. Those are the stakes. They're playing for all the marbles. These people have been in charge of our financial system the entire time. The America you think you hate was created by the very people that you're carrying water for right now. That's been my big insight over the last 4 years. That's what animates me when I get up in the morning. It took me years to see this. It took me years of studying the plumbing and studying the all of it. And I'm like, that's why I sound like a lunatic half the time. And I've got news for you. I can see it. The Trump gets it. And the people, most of the people around Trump get it. And they get it at a level that I never thought he had. He did. I never thought this. I mean, go back and watch interviews with me from November, December. Like, I didn't believe, or November, I didn't believe that shit about Trump. I hoped, but I wasn't counting on it. And then I watched it happen and I'm like, oh, never mind. Like, he gets it. Like, he gets it. And so this is why he's willing to burn, certain people to the ground. And he's burning those people like Massey and Paul. He's burning them to the ground because he has to. In order to get this done, he has to do this. And they're falling right into that trap. The libertarians' right has been egregiously amplified above its friggin' power level in this fight in order to be the wedge voting group to split the MAGA movement. They perfect. It's a perfect psychological operation. You take people who are naturally skeptical of everything, naturally distrust everything, who have been rewarded for years with being right about these things. And then when the time comes for the opposition, for people who are trying to, they're activated as the antipode. They're activated as the useful idiot. I've been watching this like happen for years. And I could see it coming, and I'm like, oh, Christ, I'm freaking correct. They're going to go there. And I don't know what else to do. Like, Rand Paul and his penny plan. Thank you for 2012, dude. Like, sounded great. Yeah, how about for next year? But this one right now, this needs to get done.
Well, let's bring it back a little bit because you did talk about the November, December. You didn't quite, think that Trump had this in him. Well, I mean, around July of last year, that was when they tried to take him out, and then Trump came to the Bitcoin conference and everything like that. I mean, you had a great interview about, what you thought was behind that assassination attempt. Now, right. Has anything changed with that? Or do you think, you want to dive into to why you think they tried to take him out and, how you see this playing out in the future? Like, are they going to try again? Is this something that he has got to be in constant fear? And, this could be like basically everything's hanging on this tiny, string where,
No, the you kill Trump now, he's a martyr. Now you have to destroy him. Like, you either, this is right back to the Dark Knight. You either die a hero or you live just long enough to see yourself become the villain.
So then what was the
They're trying to turn Trump into the villain.
So the attempt then back in the, was it basically the worry of what we're seeing right now is that basically everybody's darkest nightmares on that side, you know, Davos and everything else is starting to come true. That's why they tried to do it initially.
Yeah, they tried to kill him last year because they had it set up that they were never going to let him back into power. That there was they were going to give us, you know, Nikki Haley versus Kamala Harris in the first, you know, all Indian female presidency. That's what they were going for.
Yeah, we were millimeters away from that then. So, I mean, outside of that, yeah. I mean, with that developing now, obviously we've seen the Doge and like the Elon connection. I don't know how closely you've been following it on Twitter, but literally as we're doing this interview, thing is blowing up where Trump and Elon are now starting to go at it. And Elon's opposition of the big, beautiful bill that, you know, we've been talking about basically this entire time. So like, what do you take on, you know, I guess like Elon's role in all of this and him somewhat, I guess, like flipping on Trump here recently?
The question, I guess the bigger question is whether or not it's actually kayfabe, right? Whether or not this is all just Elon trying to push people or, you know, push people to pass the bill on the opposite side of the equation. Like there's, you know, I don't know. Like I've said at the outset, I don't consider Musk a particularly stable person. Like, let's not. And I always, you know, I don't know. Is Musk, like, everybody's like, well, I don't trust Musk, blah, blah, blah. You know, we've been going back and forth on this. And like, at the end of the day, what you're supposed to do is, you know, you're supposed to make a decision. I back this guy. If he betrays me, then I'm fucked, right? So, and then that destroys everybody's credibility who backed him originally because, well, you backed Elon. Elon backed out on Trump, so obviously Trump is now the villain. Or there's something else at play here that we can't see, right? And, I mean, if this is the grand betrayal by Elon Musk at the final hour. It's pretty well played, right? So,
well, how,
it's a good question.
Yeah, how so? If it's well played, then what about this timing would be significant?
Well, I mean, what I mean is it well played by him being the. You know, being the Joker, in effect.
Okay.
Right. That's what I mean. Like, I'm not well played from my perspective, well played from that perspective, from the game perspective. Well played, dude. You rolled me. Okay. Well, you know, in this game, you don't get a chance to win or lose. Again, about in this game, it's a game that never ends. So then the big question is, again, I don't know. Like, we're going to find out. If the bill passes in the next 7 to 10 days and Elon exits the scene, who cares?
Yeah.
If the bill passes in its current form, it doesn't matter. And again, then, you know, Musk is, you know, persona non grata. I don't know. Like, again, like this idea that one person stood up against the bill, which is bullshit. 214 people stood up against 213 people on the Democrat side stood up against this. At the end of the day, who work for is the question you're always asking yourself. And at this moment in time, you either believe in Trump, in the opposition to Trump, or you don't. And in every venue, you're seeing opposition to Trump in every venue, geopolitically, domestically, domestic policy, the judiciary, Congress, Senate, blah, 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 blah. Everybody's against him. When you see that kind of orgy of of opposition. Yeah, markers are being called in. We got Steve Bannon out there giving us the bullshit that Scott Bessent punched Elon Musk out. Really? How about you don't think that Klaus Schwab or, you know, walked over to Elon's house and punched and you know, had with a large Mexican and threw him down the stairs? Every time somebody does something that is out of character or is a fundamental betrayal of the American people. Ever notice how there's always a fucking black eye? Harry Reid, Mitch McConnell, John Roberts, Elon Musk? I don't know. I'm going with that heuristic of they threw him down the stairs. That Davos paid a large, you know, to quote Doonesbury, they paid a large Mexican $50 to throw him down the stairs. Like, you know, is Musk does Musk have weaknesses, vulnerabilities financially? I don't know. You tell me. But
yeah,
why would everybody think at this moment in time that, oh, because Thomas Massey and Rand Paul and Elon Musk were all against the bill, now the bill's bad. When Stephen Miller has been telling you for 3 weeks now what the process is and how they've gamed this fucking thing out. And every time Miller opens his mouth, I retweet it. Go read my feed. The realities of this bill, the realities of budget reconciliation under Senate rules, blah, 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 blah. Am I happy with the bill? No. Do I want to see more cuts? Of course. But I'll take $167 billion a year to start out with, knowing full well that Trump is going to probably increase revenue by $500 to $700 billion a year between tariffs and tax collections, lowering rates to spur growth and all the rest of it easily, which the CBO always downplays. Always. So, you know, they always overestimate what they're going to get. We're going to get from tax increases. They always underestimate what we're going to get from tax cuts. Every time they've been wrong about everything for the last 60 years. They're always wrong, every time. And we're supposed to be good libertarians and we're now supposed to believe government statistics? Really? That's new. Like, I'm serious. Like, at a certain point, your heuristic, it has to be very simple. Whatever they're fighting us on, they fight us on everything. That means if they're fighting us on it, it's probably a good thing. It always is. It may be a good thing in ways we can't see.
My favorite thing about Bitcoin is meeting Bitcoiners in person. That's why I'm so excited to tell you guys about what is going on June 14th down in beautiful Tampa Bay, Florida. That's the Sound Money Soiree paired with Bitcoin Day. They're bringing a full day of great talks with amazing speakers like your boy here. And we're topping it off with a black tie event just for you and bring in that hot lady friend. We had Bitcoin cross 100K. We're all getting girlfriends, folks. So come on down to beautiful Tampa, Florida. And if you use the link below, you will get 10% off your entire order, whether you want to go to just the black tie event or black tie event plus Bitcoin Day, you'll get 10% off using the links below. Also, if you're thinking about going to BitBlock Boom in April, if you're going to Vegas in May, or if you're thinking about going to Prague in June, use my promo code GREENCANDLE for all of those. You'll get 10% off your entire order. And come bug me. I hope to see you guys very soon at one of these great in-person events. Enough for me. Back to the show.
So do you think that with this, right? I mean, we got Scott Bessent pretty close mixed in with everything. And Trump has said a lot of things about the overall budget. You know, obviously we've gotten Doge, who's come in and tried to cut a lot of the miscellaneous spending, as I'll put that lightly, I guess, instead of obviously, right. as we know, that the craziness that the government's gotten into the past, you know, God knows how long. But, you know, do you think that we're able to get out of this? We'll start like that sovereign wealth fund and then, you know, is this possible in 4 years, really?
Yeah. There's a sovereign wealth fund. It's easy. Fannie and Freddie are going to be listed in this, and the government's 80% ownership in that is going to get dumped right into the sovereign wealth fund. Like, that's obvious. That's the first one. There's other things. Like, the sovereign wealth fund is not hard to build. Like, it's not hard to build. You instantiate it into being, and then you dump assets into it, and then you dump revenue streams into it. And if those assets are, you know, royalty streams off of oil revenue, oil wells and mining concessions and all the rest of it, then fine. And then you just build it up that way. And then eventually what you're trying to do is you're trying to build a pile of assets there. Well, really, I'll tell you what I suspect. And I've talked to people who are close to the administration on this. So I have a better, I say this with a fair amount of certainty. Again, salt at the taste, but I think the goal eventually is to take Social Security off of, at a minimum, off of the general budget and stick it into the sovereign and effectively pay it out of the sovereign wealth fund. Now, when you do that, you take that off the liability side of the American government's balance sheet, the future unfunded liabilities of Social Security. Something else I want to remind everybody about. We're into the big boomer die-off already. We're still analyzing a lot of these markets as if these boomers are going to live forever, but the most of them are going to be dead in the next 10 years. That's where 90% of the unfunded liabilities problem of the United States comes from. And we're already halfway through it, but we still analyze, we still talk. I see it all the time. We still talk about these things as if it's about to happen. We still have this. I remember, you know, it's like the numbers from, you know, 10, 15 years ago, $230 trillion worth of unfunded liabilities for Social Security and Medicaid. I hate to break it to everybody, but have you looked at the excess death curves? I'm not happy about this. It's monstrous what's been done at the end of the day. Don't get me wrong. Like, it's monstrous. It's disgusting. It's anti-human, it's vile, it's all of those things. But if we're just talking the budget bill and we're talking balance sheet stuff, you've got to put that aside for this conversation, right? You can't, you know, you can't engage your emotions however, you know, much you feel about this, and rightly so, about how they're literally killing off boomers with the fucking COVID shot and everything else, that the boomers are dying off faster because they don't want to pay their Social Security. They don't want to pay the Medicare. I've been saying this since COVID, that I thought COVID was an operation as a thing. The way they were prosecuting COVID, it looked to me like an operation to kill off as many pensions as possible. But they were successful. I hate to say this, right? Sadly, it's successful. It's disgusting, but it was successful. That's the truth. Lifespan in the United States is falling. It's gross. It makes me sick to even talk about it in these terms. It's true. And so therefore, so many of the projections of where we are financially, we're still dealing with the imprint of thinking that that's where we are, where we were pre-COVID. We're still in that mindset, not thinking about where we are 5 years post-COVID. And so maybe the numbers aren't really as bad as people want you to believe they are. And I got news for you. There ain't anybody in fucking governmental office doing these actuarial statistics that are working for us. They're working for them. They're working for those fucking assholes who have destroyed our country and destroyed civilization, or trying to destroy civilization. And I'm sorry, but that's where I see it. And you don't have to like my perspective on this. You can even not agree with it. I don't give a shit anymore. But that's where we are. That's the reality. Now, do those numbers, do that math, come back to me. Do you have an argument? Because if we find out that the balance sheet of the United States, unfunded liabilities plus current liabilities, are $100 trillion lower than we think they are, all of a sudden, we don't look like the empire of chaos, as Pep Escobar likes to call it. We don't look like the guys who are about to fall off a cliff. Where are you going to go? Where's the capital going to go? Where's the investment capital going to go? It's going to, we're going to build car plants in Saudi Arabia? Really? Okay. No, you can clearly, they're coming here. Europe? You looked at the birth rates in Europe. You know, they are desperate to stave off a deflationary wave that is profound. But everybody at the end, the question is, where is everybody in the world? I'm talking now at the country level. Where are they at the, are they at the periphery of the global financial system or the center of the global financial system? This is something that I struggled with for a long time. And I didn't want to believe it when I was a good doctrinaire libertarian. And I got news for you. It's the truth. Martin Armstrong kept saying the center of the old system does not fail. Capital rushes to it, not away from it. And everybody who's selling you that it's going somewhere else is lying to you. And if you trust those people and they're lying to you, that's on you. That's between you and your therapist and the man in the mirror. It's that simple. I had that come to Jesus moment about 10 years ago. And I went short the euro. And what's the European Union trying to do? They're trying to game current events and the political and financial space system to allow them to go for political and fiscal and military integration of the European continent under one set of institutions, the European Commission, the ECB, the European Court of Justice, and/or with help from the UN, in order to have a more perfect fiscal union, a United States of Europe, but with a political structure of the USSR. That's what they're trying to pull off. And then they want to move the center of the financial world from the United States back there. But the reality is, and the real insight is that it never left. It was always just on loan to us. And now they're trying to call in the loan. And we're saying, you know what? No, fuck you. It's our money. It's our land. It's our country. And we're not giving it back. Okay. Once you see it from that perspective, you know, can you live with $167 billion worth of cuts this year? And then we'll go for another $300 billion next year. And then we'll raise revenue by $700 billion over the next 2 years. And by the end of Trump's term, we'll be at where Besant wants us, 3% growth and a 3% budget deficit, which we can sustain as we fix the unfunded liabilities problem. Or are we going to sit there and say, $37 trillion? Yeah, well, when you got... If we're going to scream $37 trillion in debt and not look at the assets on the balance sheet, it's not an argument. It's not an argument. It's histrionic. It's good on Twitter. It's a good soundbite. And it sucks as an argument. Because assets liabilities. Last I checked, I will invoke the Mises saying that double entry bookkeeping was the eighth wonder of the world. Something to that effect. Okay.
Well, what about there.
This connection is really pissing me off.
Okay. All right. Well, I wanted to ask you right about the debt to GDP as the last question, because,
debt to GDP is a dumb fucking statistic. How about that? Always has been, always will be.
Love it.
I'm just going to leave it there. I think GDP is a dumb statistic. I think debt to GDP is a dumber statistic. If debt to GDP has ever been a good heuristic for anything, yeah, maybe under the gold standard it was. We're not under the gold standard. Just leave it there. That's the whole, this is not going there. Debt to GDP is dumb. Okay? It's dumb.
Yeah, good. I had a feeling you're going to have a strong opinion on that as well. But Tom, you're
I do. I have a strong opinion on everything. I'll give you that one for free. It's dumb. Yeah. Stop talking about it. Start talking about revenue. We're talking about how you improve revenue streams. Start talking about how you handle capital more efficiently, more effectively, and keep it at home. Part of what's really pissing me off about I am in a heightened state about this particular thing right now because I can see how important it is right now. But the reality is, the situation as it stands right now is that that's very important. We have to understand that this is a process, not a step function. Okay. And, all the world needs from us in the end is a statement that we're willing to do something to fix things. That's all they need. They don't need us to fix everything. If we make a statement that we're willing to fix some things, the capital flows in and they will help us fix everything else, because that capital will come in and then have a say in how we fix everything else. Trump is doing that. The Senate is setting up the structures to capture that capital as it comes in, get enough of it to fix the U.S. balance sheet, and then we let the chips fall where they may after that. There you go. That's my thesis.
I love it, Tom. You're always electric, and it's so much fun having you on this show. It's been too long, so why don't you tell people where they can find you and, more about what you're doing.
All right, so just, keep it simple. Patreon.com/ColdGoatsAndGuns is the service. You can find me on Twitter, being probably as bad as I am. I was today on Twitter every day at TFL1728. We have a podcast that I publish through Spreaker, but it's on every platform, the Gold Goats and Guns podcast, where I try and go through a lot of the really, I try and get the best guests to go through the nuts and bolts and the nitty gritty of how we're going to change this system. I didn't do that today in this interview, but if I didn't piss you off while I did this interview today, do me a favor, go listen to Caitlin Long and Vince Lanchi and Brett Johnson and the others. They'll help you. The two of us, us together, we're explaining it all. It's pretty obvious at this point. It's not that hard, but you do need to level up in terms of your understanding of the plumbing, how banking works, how the regulations all interact and everything else. Because if you don't, you're going to just scream $37 trillion worth of debt and not get it. And anybody who's just selling you on that number, I'm telling you, is lying to you. And nice sound bites, makes for nice tweets, but doesn't make for good public policy. All right, I'm out.
There we go. I'll put all that in the show notes. You guys hit that like button and the subscribe button here. And follow Tom and everything he's doing. Absolutely electric. Tom effing Luongo, the GOAT. Appreciate you, man.
Thank you for tuning into the latest episode of the State of Bitcoin podcast. If you really enjoyed this one, I've got another one cooking up for you. You can click that right here and you can go to the next episode, which is an absolute banger, where I'm bringing you only the latest and greatest guests. Or if you're looking for more macro-related content, you could check out my other channel, Macro Insights Pod. I got it linked for you right here. So where I'm bringing you more about stocks, real estate, traditional finance stuff. So go ahead and check that out. And if you enjoyed this podcast, go ahead and hit that like, hit that subscribe button, and tell a friend to tell a friend. All right, enough from me. I'll see you at the next one.